Continuation of the endless November 26th, though there is light at the distant, distant, distant end of a tunnel that travels through the Earth. That might actually be the center of the Earth. That might be the glow of the center of the Earth that we're seeing right now. This might be about the halfway point. And so we have agreed, because it's courteous to our boards and agencies to have their presentations time-specific to respect their busy schedules. So we are continuing our break, having in the capital budget deliberations on the amendments to the capital budget. We're continuing our interlude from that. We started with library last night, and we will continue with police services today, and then, well, strictly speaking, the commission, but accompanied by the chief, which we appreciate, and then the economic development, then Edmonton Arts Council, and then there's some cross-reference between the Arts Council and the Heritage Council, so my suggestion is that we would do the Heritage Council as number four, then the Combative Sports Commission as five, EFCL as six, Ford Edmonton as seven, Greater Edmonton Foundation as eight, REACH as nine, and Space Science Foundation, which I think is more or less for questions only, as number 10.
They may or may not
present. It depends. Okay. Well, they can let us know maybe closer to. So that's the order in which we'll go. Of course, members of council will have opportunities to ask questions of each one of these agencies as they present on their operating submissions, though they are by no means obliged to ask questions. So after we've heard from all of these, we will resume our capital budget amendment deliberations, and then once we have exhausted ourselves and the amendments, we will probably take a bit of a recess while administration shuffles and then gives us an update and then begins on the operating presentations by department. And are we doing presentations by department or just questions like we did?
We're doing brief presentations.
Brief presentations and then our opportunity to ask questions of each department. And at the rate we're going, this is going to go into next week. I haven't started a pool yet on how far into next week, but just to think about that in terms of all of the appointments that we optimistically scheduled for early next week that now need to be canceled. So that's the process for today's meeting and immediately subsequent meetings. Now we also have an additional report that which is 11.2, which is the establishment of the photo enforcement reserve report. If somebody care to move that as an addition, Councillor Walters?
Yep, I'll move it.
Second.
Seconded by Councillor Loken. Please vote to add that to the agenda and display the vote. And that is carried. And now we are on police service presentation. Go ahead. Welcome back.
Good morning. Feels like we were just here. Good morning, Mayor Iverson and members of the City Council. I'm Shami Sandhu, Chair of the Edmonton Police Commission. Presenting alongside me today is Chief Rod Connect and EPS Executive Director of Finance, Jody Buxa. The Edmonton Police Service budget can be found starting on page 493 in your binders. One of the Commission's roles is to review and approve the EPS budget prior to coming to Council. We have done several reviews and revisions, and the budget being presented today has the full support of the Commission. We believe it to be a fair representation of the true policing needs in Edmonton. We'll start today with Chief Connect, who will go over internal reallocations to date and the current environment.
Good morning, Your Worship, and members of City Council. The first issue I will address this morning relates to reallocations and efficiencies within the Edmonton Police Service. Over the previous 4 years, the Edmonton Police Service has reallocated close to $20 million from current services to address new, emerging, and exigent priority demands based on a fluid and dynamic community environment. The growing and changing face of our city has created unique challenges for your police service. Many of our reallocations resulted in some long-established programs being reduced, restructured, or completely eliminated in order to address new pressures. From January to April, over the previous 4 years, the EPS has conducted a complete scrub down and reprioritization of the approximately 190 programs that we deliver. We did this to more efficiently address community needs, new legislation, as well as evolving criminal activity. Specific to the city's 2% innovation, 15 positions have been redeployed from areas of lesser priority to areas of high operational need. One such efficiency was in the establishment of permanent positions, both sworn and non-sworn, for the important need for recruitment, selection, and training of new personnel. These duties were previously performed by seconding operational police officers from the front line. Other examples include repurposing of an electronic surveillance technician position to the front line, a police library position to training support, and a public information officer to a position in human resources. With the implementation of the capital and operating budget system, the calculation of personnel has been refined. This has resulted in funding being freed up to create 6 positions to address a significant pressure in 911 emergency call operations and funding to cover rent at the new interim Northwest Division station. Every reallocation has resulted in greater organizational efficiencies and a reduction in our budget ask. Next slide. Our current environment. Before you is a snapshot of crime and calls for service for 2013 and 2014 year to date. Overall, we are seeing a gradual but continuous rise in crime. The most recent Statistics Canada report on crime notes that the city of Edmonton is the only major city in Canada that has not seen a decline in violent crime or property crime. Our violent crime is up only marginally. This is quite a significant achievement given the extraordinary rise in population in metropolitan Edmonton, as well as our shadow population. Success in reducing violent crime is attributed to the ongoing violence reduction strategy that continues to bear positive results. However, sexual assaults continue to be a significant challenge. In the area of property crime, we continue to see more pronounced increases, most significantly in the categories of theft from vehicles and theft of vehicles. Calls for service are also increasing year over year. We've included some of the numbers in our budget submission, but one of the issues that impact your police service from a resourcing and response perspective is the 4 consecutive years that we have had increases in call volume. Last year, dispatched calls increased 4.8% from the year before. So far this year, they are up another 3%. Each call averages a response time of approximately 104 minutes. Our greatest increase in calls for service, often repeat calls for service, evolve around social disorder involving the mentally ill, homeless, and addicted. Next slide, please. Significant impacts. The City of Edmonton is a unique environment, given its recognized status as a gateway to and from the north. We are also experiencing unprecedented growth in our city and in our shadow population. Add in a booming economy, a welcoming environment, the availability of services to address social issues, and extraordinary downtown development, the result is a community of opportunity and advantage for many. No city in North America is dealing with such a quickly evolving environment like the one we are seeing in downtown Edmonton. There are currently over 30 major projects underway with a combined value of nearly $4 billion. Our city is growing up as much as it is growing out. With physical growth comes increasing populations, and it comes as no surprise that there are the inherent higher calls for service. Regrettably, the criminal element sees our city as an opportunity and advantage to prey on our most vulnerable. The entertainment district and those in neighborhoods that bump up against that vitality will require uniquely customized prevention, intervention, and suppression policing strategies and community partnerships and engagement. This will ensure that safety is sustainable for all our citizens and visitors to Edmonton. Concurrent major events can create public order issues between the Shaw, the Rexall, and Northlands. Providing an adequate police response to these venues and surrounding communities creates workload challenges. With the inclusion of Rogers Place, multi-venue deployments will become the norm for the Edmonton Police Service. Decisions made by various orders of government continue to impact on our workload. By one example only, A Supreme Court decision has expanded the time required to obtain user information from an internet service provider from what was several minutes is now up to 8 hours to get a search warrant for the same information. One of the greatest areas of growth in criminal activity is in the area of cybercrime. We are seeing an extraordinary increase in victimization that is being facilitated through the internet and social media. This is an area of crime that is largely unreported. Bullying, sexual assault, financial fraud, child abuse, and most every other crime is being facilitated via the internet. The Edmonton Police Service is not properly positioned to address the cyber community within our traditional communities. Next slide, please. Service standards and benchmarks. The Commission and the Edmonton Police Service work together to develop police service standards. The targets are meant to be realistic yet challenging. However, with rapidly increasing population and calls for service, some of our critical targets are not being met. A top concern for both communities and police are priority one calls, those calls that involve immediate victimization. The standard is to respond in less than 7 minutes, 80% of the time. We are only achieving these targets 71.5% of the time. A second standard is that 25% of an officer's time is directed towards crime prevention, community engagement, and targeted enforcement of prolific offenders and hot spots of criminal activity. Currently, we are only achieving about 15% directed time. As of November 30th of the last year, the EPS responded to more than 135,000 priority 1 to 5 calls. This was a 4.8 increase from 2012, and 2014 is already higher. The Edmonton Police Service is a young police service. Because all new police officers go straight into patrol divisions, an appropriate supervisory span of control is critical in providing the necessary guidance and support. It also ensures quality of investigations and reduced liability. The current span of control is beyond any reasonable industry standard, with one sergeant supervising 15 young constables. Downtown Division is in the midst of a successful pilot project that allows for one sergeant and to supervise 9 constables. The national police to population ratio compares staffing levels across Canada. The current national average is 197 sworn police officers per 100,000 population. Edmonton has 186 sworn police officers per 100,000 population, 11 officers below the national average per 100,000. Yet we are one of Canada's geographically largest municipalities. Our current staffing levels have created gaps in our service delivery and the inability to meet public expectations. It is a regular occurrence for us to take 2 days to respond to a lower priority call to a citizen that expects a reasonable response from their police service. Thank you.
Mayor and members of council, I'll provide you a brief financial overview of the budget. So this overview for the 2015 budget is found on page 496 of the operating budget binder. The Edmonton Police Service will see an overall increase in revenue of $2.973 million. Fine revenues, specifically relating to the Traffic Safety Act, have been decreased to align with the current trends that have been experienced over the past 18 months. The original projections for the 4 specialized traffic apprehension teams, also known as STAT, were based on a traditional traffic unit. However, the intent of these teams is to focus on interdiction, which results in criminal code violations over traffic. The municipal policing assistance grants have increased by $968,000 to address the latest census results. It should be noted that the $16 per capita funding that has been provided has not been adjusted since its inception in 2004. When inflation is applied, the $16 from 2004 is now only worth $13. No increase has been provided for the Premier's initiative, and similar to MPEG, this funding has not kept pace with inflation. In 2008, this funding covered 100% of a fifth-year constable. Today, it only covers approximately 81% with this grant. Other revenues has increased by $3.755 million, primarily due to 2 provincial grants, Emergency 911 for $2.6 million, and the Heavy Use of Services grant for $500,000. The remainder is due to rate increases for extra duty policing, tow lot storage fees, and police information checks to account for overhead and also keep pace with inflation. Increases in revenue are offset with increases in expenditure. Expenditures and transfers for the Edmonton Police Service is increasing by $10.38 million. The primary increase is relating to personnel increases of $7.177 million. A total of 66.75 full-time equivalents will be added to the Edmonton Police Service in 2015. 15 account for the annualization of positions that were approved as part of Budget 2014. 37.75 will be funded from the revenue increases and reallocations identified as part of the 2% innovation, and 14 new FTEs will be added to support the new Northwest Division and address the growth in the city. External services account for the second largest increase at $2.5 million, the majority of which is offset by the revenue for the Emergency 911 grant. The use of these funds have been restricted by the province and must be spent on enhancements to the 911 services. As a result, the change in the net operating requirement for the Edmonton Police Service is $7.407 million. With this increase in the EPS accounts for 15.4% of the city total budget, down from the average 17% in previous years. I'd like to turn it back over to Chair Sandhu.
In 2011, City Council approved the construction of the Northwest Division Station as part of a larger police campus in the northwest corner of the city. However, in response to soaring call volumes, it is essential to have a temporary Northwest facility in place now, rather than waiting until 2018. A building has been rented, and approximately 120 constables from across the city are being transferred to the new division to provide service. This interim facility addresses span of control issues and permits the rebalancing of workload, as some divisions are experiencing higher call volumes. We believe it will allow us to help address response times across the whole city. This package specifically funds the supervisors for the new Northwest Division. With the increased demands for service arising from the population and economic growth across Edmonton, the need to keep pace is critical. Earlier this year, the EPS identified nearly 200 positions that were urgently required to address this growth. The Edmonton Police Commission supported 136 of these positions. 21 were added through increased grant revenue projections. 17 were added through the $4 million in reallocations, meeting the 2% innovation. 14 are related to the funded Northwest Division service package previously mentioned. 84 still remain unfunded. The remaining 84 positions are dealt with in two service packages. The growth in policing package includes 17 frontline police officers to address increasing call volumes. It also includes positions to address the increasing sophistication and complexity we are seeing in certain types of crime. For example, child pornography cases now involve child protection unit, internet child exploitation officers, and interview experts on the same file. Adding to the complexity is the amount of documentation and disclosure required by the courts to successfully prosecute these cases. This package also includes detectives to address an 85% increase in child protection unit cases, as well as officers to deal with offenses caused by Edmonton's 50 worst youth offenders. It also includes specialized officers for areas such as canine, tech crimes, explosives, and cybercrime. The remaining 49 positions address two important projects for the City of Edmonton: downtown revitalization and the LRT expansion. 40 additional frontline police officers will provide directed and response-based enforcement, public safety, event management, crowd control, and traffic management in the downtown area. They will also be available to work with vulnerable citizens who reside in this area. Due to the magnitude of development taking place downtown, four 10-member squads will be required. Crime analysis will be used to determine where and when these squads are deployed, and officers will have ownership of specific geographic routes or beat areas. An additional 9 positions will formalize this year's successful transit and police pilot project on the LRT line. Police officers will continue to work with transit peace officers to provide enforcement of criminal code violations and transit bylaws on trains, stations, and surrounding neighborhoods. Through preventative policing, highly mobile officers will also discourage the use of the LRT as a conduit for disorder and criminal activity. It is the Commission's view that the Chief and his team have done a tremendous job in constantly revisiting and improving their services to the citizens of Edmonton. We, as a Commission, encourage and support this. There has been extensive dialogue between the Commission and the service about this budget. The service packages brought forward today address the immediate needs of the Edmonton Police Service and the citizens it serves. Thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you. We're open to any questions or other issues you would like to raise.
Just a trivia question before I go to the councillors. What's your FTE cost for sworn these days?
The FTE cost or count?
Cost per.
Per 150. It's about 150 fully loaded. So that includes like the kit and clothing and all of that. It's about 150,000.
Okay, thank you. Just need to do some math before I come back around and ask my questions. First up, Councillor Caterina. Thank you for the presentation, and thank you for doing the work through the efficiency initiative as well. That's much appreciated, and for sharing that with us. Councillor Caterina, I'll start your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I won't need all that time. On my interest is the nine positions for transit policing. Maybe a little more detailed explanation of how the pilot went, and maybe some of the results, and I need to know what those nine positions, what the dollar value is, because from this is lumped into the 40 plus the nine, right? I'd like to know what the nine is standalone.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Councillor, I'll introduce the topic, and I'll have Deputy Brian Simpson, who oversees that pilot project for us, provide you in some further detail. But it was a pilot project and a partnership between Transit and EPS. So we partnered up a peace officer with a fully sworn police officer, and we saw immediate positive results and reduced incidents of crime on the lines that we were participating on. And I'll now turn it over to Deputy Simpson.
Mayor, councillors, that project was very successful. It was a collaboration between ourselves and transit. We recognize that the branding of safety on the transit system directly relates to the branding of safety within the community, and that's been borne out by other North American models. The key with this process is recognizing we have two sets of skills and areas of responsibility, and they complement each other nicely in terms of getting the job done. Simply from the process of dealing with social disorder, from the CPOs, checking on fares, and dealing with any lower level issues, and having that police officer presence to deal with the higher level issues around crime. A prime example is we saw a lot of success in dealing with warrants that were on the LRT process. One individual, for example, had 81 warrants. He'd been questioned a lot of times, but with that police officer there, actually told the truth, and it was good. And this, I use those type of examples because with that complimentary service, we were able to collaborate with information and have the visibility and deal directly with what we saw as issues happening on a day-to-day basis, looking at the transit system, because in doing our analytics, the criminals are traveling. If they're not stealing a vehicle, they're usually all on the LRT specifically.
Okay, and do we have a dollar amount for or the value of the nine that you're requesting? Okay, you're getting that up there. Deputy Chief Simpson, the pilot actually was effective in you identifying the disorder that happens in communities, sort of the path that criminals use with access to LRT that now gives them access to a good portion of the city.
Absolutely. The other benefit, too, is just the collaboration in terms of information share. We attended briefings with transit. They attended our briefings. And that sharing was happening before, but with this enhanced process, it just was even more so. And we saw a direct benefit from that in terms of having that real-time knowledge.
We have, maybe not just anecdotally, I have some anecdotal information that's been given to me by residents in the areas that these were deployed. And it's anecdotal because they felt better. They felt better seeing your members there on the line, on the train, at the stations. Have you had that same reaction? Or
We've had very positive comments come back from the public and actually also from the transit officers and the police officers that were involved in the program. Visibility works, but that visibility actually has to be actioned into some function, and we did see the benefit of that function.
Okay. Mr. Wanzura, do you have anything you'd like to comment on for that particular program or from your perspective on how it worked with partnering up with EPS and transit security?
I would echo the Chief's and Deputy Chief's comments. Our folks found it very valuable. We found that the integration of the two services was provided a better level of service and higher sense of security for our riders.
Thank you.
Total cost is about $1.4 million.
$1.4 would, because this is part of the unfunded.
Yes.
Okay, so $1.4 would be required for 9 positions to make this a permanent program.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's what I needed.
Thank you. Next up is Councillor McKean.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for the presentation. Chief, you talked about the rise in crime, and I know how that could be reported, but that is not per capita. In other words, that's a gross. We've had tremendous population growth. You would expect to see crime rates rise.
Absolutely. That would be, yeah.
It's not like things are getting worse. It's we have more people.
That's right. I would say it's kind of stable. Right. You know, the rise in crime, as I stated, violent crime's up about 1.5%, property crime's up about 4%, and given the population, you know, that's to be expected.
And we also have, I think, the youngest demographic in major cities in Canada, which is another. We know that there's a certain demographic that is associated with higher crime levels.
Well, that's a good point, Councillor. I think that exactly. It's not so much the population, it's the makeup of the population. And we've had a study done by a professor from Grant MacEwan University that says the incidence of violence is focused on the 18 to 34-year-old male, and that happens to be the demographic that is migrating to the city. So we would expect to see a rise in crime.
Now, you have fine revenues down for traffic enforcement. I believe I'm hearing that right.
That is correct.
And if I'm hearing that right, it raises the question of why that's not a higher... Let me ask this first. Does that reflect then the amount of traffic enforcement you're doing?
To a degree. So what happens is we have folks, everybody has the latitude to write a ticket, but with the calls for service are up, we're not writing as many tickets because we're going to calls as opposed to doing traffic duties. And that's, traffic duties are part of the proactive time or the directed time that we say we want to be 20-25%, and that's down to 15% just because of the calls for service.
Is traffic enforcement was, I think, the highest priority in the surveys you did of Edmontonian?
For about 10 years now, it continues to be the highest priority. The challenge for us is it's just a capacity issue. Obviously, we can write more tickets if we're not going to as many calls. So we do have a dedicated traffic unit, and then we have the 4 staff teams. And the staff teams were provided to us by City Council 3 years ago. Those staff teams use traffic enforcement to get inside the vehicle, essentially, which is they do write a ticket, but it's a more prolonged investigation because they'll look at other aspects of crime. And I attribute the staff teams to the fact that we are managing violent crime because they are targeting those prolific offenders.
Now, in a couple of places in your presentation, you talked about downtown and the growth downtown, and the entertainment district was mentioned, but a lot of this stuff does not open this year. Are you ramping up? So could we expect to see a similar ask next year, or please explain that to me, why we're talking about the entertainment district now?
That's a great question, and I thank you for that. What is happening is we know that the arena specifically in the downtown area will be more robust. September of 2016 is a target date for us. So we're asking for these resources now, the 40 for downtown specifically and the LRT resources, because we take between 18 and 20 months to ramp up. So we've got a market we've got to recruit, and then we've got to train, and that's a 20-month cycle to go through all that. So the resources we're asking for today, you can say, well, you don't need them now, you need them in 2 years, or for September of 2016. In fact, we do need them now because we have to train up those folks and get them ready for 2016.
With population growth, and I know you're running as fast as you can to keep up with that, but if there's a reactive model to policing and there's a proactive or problem-solving model to policing, and I'm not suggesting you do one completely over the other, but I did not see, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong here, I didn't see an increase in the neighborhood empowerment teams, which in my experience were very powerful in dealing with problems. Is there a reason for that, why you're not putting more resources there?
Again, it's kind of time sensitive. We see where our greatest challenges are in responding to calls for service, and so we would love to invest more in prevention. We're not there in this particular cycle. Perhaps next year, the year after, as we monitor things. But right now, our deficit is in, for example, investigating sexual assaults. We see those going up, training up significantly right now. There may be two reasons for that: an awareness issue, as well as maybe there's more crime out there, and we don't know what that is. But it's a unique balance in policing. It's all about investing in education, prevention, intervention, and enforcement. We've got to get that dynamic right, and it's constantly shifting. Right now, what we're trying to do is we're going to have to invest in enforcement this year to get us up to par to respond to those calls of service. And we hope, if this works out properly and our plans take effect, that then we start to shift that balance towards the other end of the continuum. But you're absolutely right, net teams, those kinds of things, they provide tremendous value to communities.
I'm out of time. Thanks very much.
Councillor Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, folks. Thanks for the presentation. So just to kind of pick up on the traffic safety piece, so as Councillor McKean said, survey after survey for 10 years has resulted in traffic safety, community traffic safety being the highest concern. So in the unfunded package that we have in front of us, it talks about these 35 new FTEs, and 17 of which are kind of vaguely described as frontline, but it doesn't talk about community traffic safety in the profile. So can you talk about how, if at all, those FTEs will contribute to the community traffic safety issue?
Sure. So I can tell you right up front, six of those are going to be committed to full-time traffic safety duties. The model we have right now, so we have a dedicated traffic team out there, and what they do is they enforce by way of metrics. So wherever the hotspots are, where the major accidents are, the serious injuries, those are taking place, that's where we focus that traffic team. I've described what the stat team does, and they move around the city as well, but they're usually doing the pipelines to the city where the major, the flow of drugs, human trafficking, etc., take place. Usually the arteries feeding the city.
But so in Southwest Division, as an example, there's 60 K-9 schools. 50% of all traffic-related complaints are related to schools. So can you say a little bit more about those six? Why six? What's the rationale behind six, and where they're going to go and what they're going to do exactly?
Right. So division officers have some latitude in how they deploy their resources. A couple of divisions in the city have chosen to have dedicated traffic units.
It's their choice. It's the district super's choice.
It's their choice based on priorities within the division. And traffic congestion around a school may not be a priority as compared to a higher crime that involves victimization. We know we have congestions around our school. We know it's an issue. It's a significant issue. By bringing these six resources online, obviously 60 schools, six resources, that doesn't cover a lot.
Well, not all six are going to Southwest.
No, they're not. But again, it's based on volume and incidents. So those resources will be rotated around, and they will be doing enforcement. But I think in that particular situation, last year I did visit a couple of those schools in September when school went in. And a lot of it, we have to get the community more engaged in that. We have to get staff involved. We have to get parents involved, because a lot of this is they're just quickly dropping off those kids and taking off in any way they can.
Right.
And and that's a difficult thing for the police to police.
So currently this package is unfunded, so let's just sort of play out that it remains that way, and just hypothetically, and if, because you talked about the redeployment of when you scrub down the 190 program, the complete scrub down of 190 programs, and there was a redeployment to priority, operational priorities, which I would assume based on your responses, the community traffic safety would be a priority. So what's the ability of the district super, with your support, to reallocate resources to community traffic safety, current resources?
Well, they will get that opportunity. Can I say that that'll happen? I can't say that'll happen. So violent crime always takes a precedent. Violent crime will always take a precedent, and victimization will always take a precedent over writing traffic tickets. And that's why we got to get the community engaged in this, because
right.
We'll never have enough resources to go around to solve all the problems. That's a given.
Yeah. I think we understand the cultural shifts around schools and kids and traffic and parents driving.
But I don't know.
So the other question I have related, and I'm glad you mentioned the violent crime, because I'm not entirely clear about this. So if you have a single officer, community patrol, frontline patrol officer, how do you divide their time in terms of traffic versus preventing violent crimes? Because dealing with and solving violent crimes, I understand, is dealt with by a different part of the force, different part of the service. So why is one traded for the other?
So
explain that to me.
So it comes down to initial calls for service. So if somebody phones 911, it may not necessarily be a 911 call, but they phone 911 and they want a police response. So that will send one car or two cars, depending on how the particular call is evaluated. Somebody goes to that call, processes it, and then goes on to the next call. Now, in a perfect world, again, we'd like to use that 20-25% to do the prevention, the intervention, the traffic work. We're not getting that. That is continuously eroded. So we're down to 15, and it's just trended down in the last 4 years, and it's just because call volumes go up.
So we're essentially competing with community policing intentions and 911 calls.
Absolutely.
That's the...
Yeah, and that goes back to Councillor McKean's comment over prevention being the ideal state, but we're not there.
Thank you. Councillor Sohi.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Hold on. Before you get started, and I'll start your time again, we have Alicia Newdecker's grade 6 class from Hollywood School. Welcome. Now, it says here that Hollywood School is in Ward 7, but that is not the case. It's in Ward... And your counselor is Councillor Henderson, who's very pleased that you know the number of your ward. Wouldn't it be better if we actually named the wards after something rather than just a number? Yeah? Yeah, I think so too. All right. Notice of motion. Well, thank you for being here. We're talking with the police service about their budget submission for next year. So welcome to City Hall. We hope you enjoy your time here. Sorry, Councillor Sohi, I'll start your time again. Apologies.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the changeover, the change from 14 to 15 is 7.4 million, and almost 96% of that, 7.1 million, is hiring 54 new officers.
It's to deal with the annualization from last year as well as bringing some new
15 annualized, 15 new positions,
yep.
FTEs, then 40 new positions and additional 14 positions for growth, 54 positions. And the 4 million in efficiencies, that 2%, is also being deployed
into that.
Okay. I had a question to our administration, and Ms. Rosen, I wasn't able to follow up with you and your staff on that. And I asked if the percentage of the growth, the assessment growth, was allocated to EPS the same way it has been done in the past. And I was told yes. But when I look at the revenue and transfers, I don't see that anywhere. So the 15% are the police budget, 30% in growth revenue would amount to about $4.5 million.
A little bit more than that, but yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I didn't see that anywhere allocated here. So can you clarify what the situation is?
Yes. So the allocation of growth was done on the same basis. What wasn't done on the same basis is the allocation of cost, in particular costs associated with settlements yet to be achieved.
Why?
And so there is... There is some cost there as well.
So it is there. And
it is there.
Okay, that's why I didn't see it. So it
yes.
Is that your understanding as well? Okay. Okay, that is clear. Thank you for clarification. I also want to share the concerns as well that shared by my other colleagues. I understand that you're trying to react to everything that is happening out there, population growth and shadow population and the challenges related to social issues. But again, it's reactive, right? And I've been here for 7 years, and every year we ask the balance between prevention, intervention, and reacting to situations, right? And I haven't seen that shifting. Even though you try to do that, there's reach out there trying to achieve the same goals. I think that tap is not being somehow narrowed or closed that leads to crime. Right? I know it's a more bigger societal issue, not just for EPS, but looking at the budget and your focus of 25% proactive time. Just how we get there with limited resources, I think there has to be some proper balance within the service as well. I know you have goals to meet, but where's the balance between meeting those goals?
So, Counselor, we are probably entered into more partnerships with other agencies and levels of government than we ever have.
And I appreciate that.
And we've aggressively sought that over the last couple of years, and it's provided us with opportunities to leverage with others. You know, the example of the working with transport. We work more closely with our colleagues with the RCMPs, Canada Border Service Agency, et cetera, and I don't want to take up your time here. But I think we have tried to strike that balance as best as we can. The challenge for us is the continuous growth. We see investment in, you know, school resource officers. I mean, if I had my way, we'd have a school resource officer in every school. In particular, I would really like to see school resource officers in junior high schools, because I think that's when the fork in the road occurs. But we just don't have the resources for that. I've wanted that since I've become the chief. We just cannot find the resources. So
I know you've been talking that, and I absolutely understand that we are being. I hope that this through the charter discussions we get a better deal related to policing, because we don't get the same kind of support that we should be getting from the province and the feds when you talk about other municipalities within the province paying $0 for policing. So we are being shortchanged in that sense, right? But I hope that those discussions progress. So at this time, those are the questions I had, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Knack.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Do we know if there's a correlation between, or do we have that information, a correlation between the amount of directed activity of patrolling versus the maybe hopeful decline in response time? Because if you're preventing more, hopefully less calls come in for emergency, thereby you're able to respond quicker. Do you have any information like that? Have you ever studied that, measured that?
I don't have that at my fingertips, but I can ask our strategy analyst, Joanne Graham, to respond to that. She may have that information.
Certainly, thank you. To answer it very shortly, we have not done that analysis to date. We are currently embarking on a very detailed analysis of the factors that impact our response time, and we can certainly take that into consideration as part of that analysis.
Because I know we chatted about it before, and I know you're dedicated to the prevention side, and as I continue to look at these goals, I always wonder if we should be flipping them and saying, you know, the number one most important thing is that 25% of the time directed activity is taking place, and then the number two important thing is you're responding to calls. Because we've talked about prevention, and we all have heard it a lot already. I'm not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel right now for moving up on the prevention side. I see us reacting to the growth, which we absolutely need to do, but if that's all I'm seeing, so I guess I'm trying to find out when is the light at the end of the tunnel? When do we get to the point that you want to be at for more prevention?
Well, I think we're moving towards that. You know, the conversations around looking at heavy users of service, those folks that are, you know, chewing up a lot of our time. Like I said, the mentally ill, the addicted, the homeless, we do respond to those calls. They take up a lot of time. We've got initiatives ongoing with the province right now, this heavy users of service, where we're looking at those prolific people that are chewing up the most amount of time. So we're trying to get into that prevention area and focus on those people. It means engaging other levels of government as well, because, you know, health has a huge component in this. We know our calls for service in responding to EMS are up 600% or 400%. I'm sorry, 400%, where we're supporting EMS in calls. Now, it's right for them to call us because they're dealing with perhaps somebody that may be violent in the first incidents, but we have to respond. We're there for a bit, and then we move on to the next call. So in the kind of environment we're in right now, we'd love to invest in prevention, and we've got a lot of those projects going in the background. But the challenge is, when somebody phones 911, they want a police officer to show up. So it's not sort of a, well, let's not do that for a while, and let's invest in prevention and see what happens, because I can assure you, all of you will be getting calls saying, where's your police service?
With regards to the increase in 911 calls, does that separate, do you separate at all calls that aren't actually, because there are some people who might call 911 where it's actually not an emergency, so when you list those stats, are those the ones that are actual emergencies, or are they all the calls total you've received, even the ones that might actually constitute more of a...
So we'll get lots of calls where people phone 911 and they're not 911 calls, so they're immediately diverted to a lower priority response. So
that stat is already with those diversions in place.
Sure, we'll get somebody that'll say, you know, their dog is lost in their house, and we'll respond, well, you know, the police won't be coming. Yep. It still requires an initial response, but that gets diverted.
No, that's fair. Okay. And then, so I guess maybe when we move into the multi-year operating budget, that might be a time where we can better showcase how we want to move, take those steps to move into prevention too. So, I mean, next year we're going to be doing a three-year plan. That might give us that opportunity, because I really want to help you get to that prevention point, because I just worry we're just going to keep throwing money and money. So do you see that as an opportunity to really put together more of a long-term plan to show here's how we might get to that?
We do have a multi-year plan. We welcome that. Yeah. We think that's fantastic. But we do, internally, we have that multi-year plan on where we see ourselves going. And obviously, the goal is always prevention. The goal is to do ourselves out of a job at the end of the day, knowing full well we'll never do ourselves out of a job. But at least, you know, the vision for the Edmonton Police Service is to make this the safest city in Canada. The only way we're going to do that is to shift from enforcement to prevention, and that's almost a generational thing, and that's getting our citizens to understand that vision as well, and their role in participating in making that happen.
And as a commission, we're looking forward to that as well. And for the last 2 years, we've been presenting to community services our 5-year strategic hiring plan, which would essentially be our 5-year budget.
Yeah, no, that's good. And last question I have with the last little bit of time. You mentioned sexual assault calls; they've been increasing pretty substantially, and you said to address that. How do you see working to address that?
A couple of things. It's a bit of a challenge because just awareness, we've seen the more awareness work we do and the more people that come forward, it creates a bit of a cascade effect. There's more people reporting crime, and I think we're just in that dynamic right now in society. Where more people are coming forward to complain about experiences. We get a lot of historical sexual assaults too. People will come forward and say, this happened a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. Very difficult investigations to undertake, and they are resource intensive as well, and we require trained investigators to do that. And so it's a challenge. It is trending up. We see a lot of it. We see a lot of sexual assaults, and we need the prevention aspect is there, and we have to focus on the offenders. We do have a program here, actually, in the city where we're focusing on offenders because we know they may offend with one person. We get a restraining order against that individual, but he goes on to another person and he gets engaged in another relationship. So the focus is, again, prevention, focus on the offender.
Councillor Nicol.
Well, thank you very much. And Chief, you got to help me with some of these numbers. I refer councillors to my questions from page 91 to 107 regarding some of the basic statistics or metrics I asked about regarding criminal code incidents, clearance rates, and so on. Just so everybody understands, what is a clearance rate for the what does that definition mean?
Basically, a crime is reported, and I'll use a homicide for example. So a homicide is reported. We solve the crime. If we solve the crime, it's considered cleared.
And then it moves on to the
that's
court, right? And the court does what it does, and we all know the issues that sometimes the door turns like this, unfortunately.
And if I can provide just a point of clarification, we will consider a homicide solved if we know who the offender is, but we can't necessarily get the evidence to charge him or take him before the courts.
Now, I see that from your clearance rates numbers, let me see if I can find those, have gone up between 2009 to 2013 from 46 to 54, which speaks to the efficacy and the efficiency of moving those things along. But I also see a drop in incident code per officer, and I also see how does that tie in together, right? In terms of, is the officers doing more paperwork? Is this why we see this one trend line going up and the other trend line going down?
That would be one reason, sir. The disclosure burden continues to increase. So, what the courts require for them to take forward a prosecution has increased exponentially over the last decade or two decades, actually. And so, there's a more requirement for a more robust investigation, a more in-depth investigation, and more paperwork, quite frankly.
Okay, I do have to also press you on another question with regards to where the crime rate is going, sir. You notice I've asked a number of metrics to compare us across the country and so on. My first question has to go to, why was not Toronto included in some of these numbers? You have Ottawa, Calgary, Winnipeg, Vancouver. Why was Toronto omitted from our national comparison?
And I'll have our statistician respond to that. So Joanne Graham, if you could answer the council's question.
Certainly. When we looked at the comparators, we looked at two aspects. We looked at a regional comparison, looking at Western Canada, which is one of the reasons we included Vancouver. And the other we did is we looked at cities that were relatively the same size. So you'll see the comparators with Edmonton, Winnipeg, Ottawa, and Calgary being somewhat similar to the same size. So that is why we did not include Toronto. Certainly, if that's information the councillor would like to see, we can provide that.
Oh, no. It just because it goes, when I look at some of the absolute numbers, when we talk about youth crime, 2009 it was 5,323, and it's now down in 2013 is 4,600. Property crime from 2009 was 6,137. It's dropped now down to 4,230. Well, you can also explain to me a little bit about the crime severity index, which has dropped from 144 to 110. Violent crimes across the board from that same time frame has dropped from 1,355 to 1,174. And so if you look at all the total, and it's write the numbers as you presented to me, total all criminal code violations excluding traffic, right, we took out the traffic numbers, has dropped from 9,163 to 7,104, which is a drop of 28%. Now I'll turn back to you and say to, can an argument not be made that you're doing a good job with the resources you have, and really pushing for more right now doesn't fit the trend line?
I'll get Joanne to respond to the statistics, and then I'll
sure.
answer the broad question.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's okay. Just that the numbers, the absolute numbers I find are going one way. So
I think certainly the statistics we've provided based on the comparators are per 100,000, and I think we had that question earlier today. If we did look at the per 100,000, would we see a flattening of the numbers? And I think, as you'll see here, that we are seeing a slight decrease. In terms of the pressures that we are seeing going forward, those have been indicated by the chief and by the chair. I would also invite Mr. Roberts if he has any comments on that.
I also think that based on some predictive work, for example, in the downtown entertainment, Councillor Nichols, we're predicting a 14%.
Where are you?
I'm right here, sir.
Oh, there you are.
Yep. It's always good to be able to ask the question and then not be seen where it's coming from. So, yeah, so we know our call volume is increasing by 4% per year. Some of that is also social disorder. It might not be around sort of the 8 crime indicators additionally. Cybercrime, we have new emerging areas of investigation coming forward. So, and we're looking at increasing in population of roughly 30,000 per year here forward. So those are sort of the factors we consider. I realize that that's not a concrete answer, but it is very dependent on the environment. I think we do a reasonable job for what we've got, but with what we've got, we're not really addressing it as harsh as we could, sir.
I think the chief is going to answer your question, I understood, and then you have no more questions.
So one thing that we need to factor in, too, is that as the population grows, our police-to-population ratios will also decline. So while we might be holding the line now, as population continues to grow, we're going to start to decline as well. So we need to be able to make sure that we're keeping pace with that inflation. Otherwise, we're just going to see it erode. Sorry.
Next up is Councillor Essinger.
Thank you very much. And when I looked at a number of the questions have been asked, but the one I wanted to ask was about the Northwest Division, and my understanding is we are going to a temporary location just because of the number of call volumes. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And once we have that in place, we would see a citywide decrease in the response time because right now they're far distance away from those areas. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. And I have actually the new superintendent in charge of the new Northwest Division office here, and he can answer your question with greater accuracy.
Perfect.
Right. So intuitively, that's what you would think. If you create a station closer to the crime, you would reduce the response to crime time. What we're hoping to achieve is a reduction in our response time. We're hoping to achieve that. But we're not adding officers to the street, so all we're doing is rebalancing, which means we're taking some from some communities, adding them to others, so we've created a balance. Previously, we had 25% of our workload in downtown division, and only 16% or 19% in some others. Through this rebalancing, we now have about a 2% variance between all six divisions. So with that, we should be better able to respond to the crime. We are closer to the crime. We hope it'll reduce our response times, but there's some administration that's required as well when you bring a new station online, so that takes resourcing. So we're going to see where it balances out. Clearly, if we had more officers, it would help, but this should help balance the workload, which we hope will assist in reducing the response to calls.
And my understanding is we have a number of supervisors that we're sending to this new division. Are these new officers or just this rebalancing?
Yeah, so it is, it's part of the efficiency. So we're rebalancing for some of the officers. Some were, but some are new. They're part of this budget task. So, for example, my position, I clearly work for the Edmonton Police Service, but I've been promoted to superintendent in charge of this division. And so some of these are promotions, new positions, I mean, which causes a chain reaction right down to the constable level.
Okay, since I have you right here, traffic safety. This ward falls in mine, and I'm just curious where your viewpoint on traffic safety is and how you see it, because I get a lot of comments from the ward on that.
Absolutely. So I guess you're asking personal opinion. So my opinion is it's important. It's important to the public. And there's two different types of traffic. There's enforcement, and then there's safety. And safety, a lot of that is perception and prevention and spending time where the community sees the needs. I see that as part of our proactive time. They said the commanders have the ability to dictate whether you have traffic constables. I'd love to bring two full-time constables into my division and to do that work with our communities, with our schools, to balance it with the community needs versus the actual enforcement. So I absolutely would see that as something we would take on within the new division.
I only ask you because you said it was a superintendent decision often.
Now, I can maybe add to that. Two of the positions that are part of this year's ask are for that division for traffic enforcement.
Okay. My other question around traffic enforcement and safety, and we know that was the concern of the community identified. Some of that's about visibility, because often what I've heard is, well, I don't see any police around, so they take some liberties. So is that part of having a more balancing approach to having police officers throughout the city. Do you think that's going to be one of the factors on traffic safety?
Well, certainly, I think the mere presence of visibility is one of the issues. You know, when we survey the public, they say they want increased in, visibility. We've addressed that in a number of ways. One was to go to a black and white car, and we saw a spike in people saying they just seemed to see more police officers out there. There were no more police officers out there. We were just a little more visible when we shifted to a black and white car. It was more noticeable, and people don't confuse us with EPCOR or any other white car that was out there. And our folks, we have the computers in the cars, so they're supposed to do as much paperwork as they can, if it means parking in a parking lot or a high visibility area, just so the general public sees that black and white car out there and they know that the police are out there. So they're not going back to the office to do their paperwork most of the time now. They're doing it actually right in the police car. But the visibility thing, you'll find some areas of the city where people will say, gee, I see there's police all over the place. And then we get some areas, and actually it's the lower crime areas, where people say they don't see the police. And they may not see the police in those areas for days and days and days, just because they're low crime areas.
My time's up already. Thanks.
Councillor Oshry.
Thank you. Let me just ask you a couple questions about the helicopter. No, I'm just kidding.
we're on the operating budget now.
So how many sworn FTEs are there?
About exactly, there's 1,668, and that varies from week to week.
Okay, and that ratio that you had 197 per 100,000, and I guess I'll ask the statistician, that's sworn FTEs?
Yeah, you're talking about police to population ratio. Yeah. Applying that through the formula, that's sworn FTEs, correct?
So that compares our sworn with everybody else's sworn, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Can you just explain? I was intrigued by the mayor's question. So an FTE costs us about $150,000 on average. How much of that is salary on average?
$120,000, right? I'm just confirming, but I believe it's about $120,000.
Is that right?
That's for a fifth-year constable, so that's what we average out. It's about 120. So there's overhead and kit and clothing, and that goes over up.
So the other 30,000 is for their gear?
Their gear, cars, facilities. Like, it's kind of the overhead component of it as well.
So their cars are part of that. That's not in anything else.
Well, when we're building the overall budget, we figure out what a constable needs to fully operate. So there's a little bit of an overhead component into that, which is about 10%. So we have salaries, benefits, kit and clothing, any space requirements that they need. That's a fully loaded cost is the 150.
Okay, but like fleet services, for example, how's that separate from the part that you allocate to a officer,
It gets allocated out to our facilities group. Yeah.
Okay, Chief, the Northwest Campus, so we've been talking about this for a while since I've been on, and it was brought up numerous times that there's going to be some operational efficiencies with the Northwest Campus. So can you tell me some specific examples of rent or something else that we're going to be saving with the Northwest Campus?
Well, I think there's a combination of things. So there's, training would be one thing, but we hope, and again, we don't want to be presumptive here, but with the redeployment, with the folks being closer to the action, so to speak, time to respond should be better. Obviously, the ability to for the community to report crime, there's going to be that police.
Those are soft metrics, which I appreciate. I'm just looking for some actual. It was mentioned that there were some operational savings as far as dollars. So
we do have a couple of leases. So right now we're going to be renting the new interim. So once that is, like, once we move into the new campus, that lease cost would be gone. We also are currently paying lease costs for our training facilities. And so once we move into the new Northwest Campus, we'll see savings for the lease costs that we currently have.
Can we have a ballpark number for do you have let me rephrase my question. Have you guys done up an analysis of what the Northwest Campus is going to save you in dollars operationally? Rent?
We have not done the full analysis on that yet, but we can.
I find that surprising.
Just hang on a second. Jerry, do we have any of that? We don't have it here with us. We can certainly get you that information, though.
I would appreciate that. Thank you. What's your... What's your biggest win in the last year, Chief, would you say? What's really gone well for the police department?
Well, I guess we've held the line on violent crime. It was trending up significantly, and I think based on the increase in population in the city and the demographic that has migrated to the city and around the city, the fact that violent crime has only gone up 1.4%, I think, is considerable when you see the reduction in victimization specific to violent crime. So that would be, I think that's one big win. I think morale in the police service has gone up, so that's internally that's a win for us. Specific to, we see a lot more community engagement. I've spoke a lot about this in the press around the fact that we have more people coming forward, citizens coming forward and reporting crime, willing to be witnesses, providing us with information as simple as getting the license number of a description on a particular issue. We had a homicide solved within less than 24 hours. Homicides on average are a $1 million expense. To solve a homicide. The fact that a citizen comes forward with a key piece of information within 24 hours, that homicide was solved within 24 hours. So, you know, that's a savings. You can't quantify it, I guess, but we would say, you know, that's a savings of $500,000 out of the police budget simply because of more community engagement and support.
Okay. I'm out of time. I'll... Thank you.
Good question, Councillor. Councillor Loken.
Thank you. I apologize for my voice. It wasn't because of yelling at the Oilers again last night. It was the budget cold, I think. But of the ask, the downtown revitalization and transit policing, I totally understand the LRT ask, and I think that's an important thing to continue. How did you determine when it comes to the proposed entertainment district, how did you determine the number of officers that you would need? Did you do research into other cities that have had a similar thing happen, some U.S. cities perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. We wanted to be proactive in this and just see what exactly we needed to get to where we wanted to go here into the future. So we actually had a team of folks go to Columbus, Ohio that has a similar venue that we're seeing unroll in Edmonton, and we went to Los Angeles where they have LA Live, and I do actually have the member that went down there and saw what they were doing there and brought back best practices for the city of Edmonton. So I think Graham Hogan is here, so he can maybe respond in more detail.
Sure. We learned that we needed to expand our existing beat model into a 7-day model from a 4-day model that we're currently in, and really focus on two areas to succeed, one in the entertainment area and one in the shelter district area of the central division that we're in downtown. To do that, we're hoping to basically create an environment where no one will be victimized when they come downtown for an event. We also learned from Los Angeles that they aligned their resources over about a 14-year period of adapting to the new arena and LA Live environment, that they needed to focus more on events planning and the hospitality industry in terms of public safety compliance. And they integrated all of that into their programs of service delivery within what they would call their BEAT programs in those two areas.
Okay, so it's more of a preventive approach than it is a reactive after the fact. Something happens, you're reacting. A police presence would create more of an atmosphere of, you know, if you're going to do something, there's going to be consequences immediately kind of thing.
That's right. We'll be able to flexibly adapt our resources to events to make sure we have enough visibility to prevent things from happening and to make sure people have a really safe place to play and have fun, even if you live here or are visitors from out of city.
Okay, great. One topic I want to mention, it's not really mentioned in any of the profiles, but it has been obviously in the media lately, unfortunately, because of the incident, recent incident in Ottawa. And I know, Chief, you've been talking about it, is counterterrorism measures. We did talk a little bit about this at the commission last time as well. Can you tell council a little bit about what the service has been doing in that regard?
Yes. I can tell you that we're part of the Integrated National Security Enforcement Team with the RCMP, Canada Border Service Agency, CSIS, etc. We have two full-time resources seconded to that. Now, those two resources are paid for by the federal government. I'm right now in conversations as recent as yesterday around getting some resources specific for the Edmonton Police Service to expand our footprint within counterterrorism.
From the feds
and actually the province as well. So we're in those discussions. We just finished a business case that we're taking forward to the province. The federal government a little bit different. We've had conversations, so we're of the view we have a seat at the table, if I can say that. We don't have the necessary resources to cover off the threat, I would suggest. And the best way to combat the terrorist threat is actually through integration, having all police services and everybody working together. What we need is we do have outreach right now into those communities. We need more robust outreach specific to counterterrorism, and we need a couple of analysts, and we need a surveillance team. So we're working with the feds in the province right now on that. They're accepting of our business case, and actually the RCMP are going to build off the business case we have, and we'll see what success we have.
Okay, without scaring the crap out of the public, would you say that things are well in control? I guess I don't. Maybe that's not the right word, but can you assure us that as of right now that people don't have to really worry a whole lot about that in Edmonton?
Well, I guess you don't know what you don't know. And that's obviously a concern, and that's why we think we need more intelligence capabilities to get into those communities, work with those communities. But we know our best, again, it's the prevention aspect. We've got to get ahead of these, because these are very resource-intensive investigations involving wiretaps, surveillance, agents, informants, etc. And so they're very resource-intensive. By getting into the communities, getting community outreach, getting the community to work with us, That's the best defense against this. We're in a good place with the majority of the communities in the city. I think we need to enhance that and be more robust. We do have active investigations. There, we do have challenges and we do have concerns, and we're addressing them the best way we can. And it's like anything else we do; we have to prioritize. So we focused on the biggest threat right now, the resources have to be focused on the greatest threat. But there's no margin for risk on these investigations. If we do have a significant threat, any threat, we have to take serious and then evaluate it and respond. And we are challenged in that area, but so are our policing partners in Edmonton and right across the province.
Thanks, and thanks for your service.
Thank you. Councillor Henderson?
Yeah, I was doing fine on some of this until I started hearing some of the answers, and I'm getting lost again. We have a funded package in here for the Northwest Station that we're now saying is just balancing and we're going to be moving everybody from everywhere else. But in actual fact, the package is saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that we're adding 13 people precisely in the supervisory sergeant roles. That those are the guys we're adding. We'll be promoting people internally, but we're backfilling the 13 positions behind. So we are actually adding people for that, correct? Because I heard something different from over here. Understanding there's going to be 98 people there, but we're adding four constables, detective sergeants, and a staff position, correct? Okay, so we are increasing capacity there. We are adding people precisely for that station. It's not a simple balance, correct? Because that's what I heard from over here.
Sorry, if I can clarify. So we're not adding patrol resource. So the actual constable is responding to calls,
right? Yeah.
But we are adding community liaison constables, domestic violence constable, we're adding detectives, we're adding an analyst. So we talked a lot about that proactive piece. We are adding to our proactive piece and our intelligence piece to supplement the patrol resource.
Okay, but I wanted to be sure, because we have a package in here that's saying we're adding resources.
Yes, we're also adding the supervisory portion of those constables, yes.
So the other question that I have, though, and this gets back to the $150,000 per constable, which I want to talk about again in a sec, but under that package, I'm calculating 165,000 per constable. We have 14 FTEs, and that's assuming they're all sworn. One of them isn't even sworn, and the 23 million divided by 14 comes out to 165,000.
There's also some one-time startup costs in that.
Well, then, if it's one-time startup costs, it goes up again in 2016 and up again in 2017. It doesn't come down.
Just hang on a second. Carry on, we'll get you the information.
Okay, and even with that question, and again, I was good with this, with 150,000 until Councillor Autry's question, because if it's 120,000 per officer and the overhead is 10%, that comes out to 12,000 per officer, which gives us 132. So what's the other 18,000 per officer?
Get you that answer.
Okay.
There'll be a second round, Councillor. So.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask Ms. Rosen a question, too, but that's okay.
No, go ahead. You can.
Ms. Rosen, I'm a little bit confused and lost in here about, and this is a generic budget question that I need to get sorted in my mind, because I thought we had an inflationary component that I thought would have dealt with this question of settlements, and another portion that was around dealing with growth in the city. So, and it's, I'm really asking this generically, because I thought I understood it, and maybe I don't, about how we're dealing with this question about assessment growth, because the city's growing, and how that gets allocated, and then how we deal with the increase in cost, which is really what the settlement portion is, and I guess this is a generic question for the whole city, because I heard you, because your answer to
so, Councillor Henderson,
is a bit different from what I thought it was.
Yeah, and we could certainly have added revenue and increased cost. So we could have added the entire growth element to the police budget, and as opposed to keeping the inflationary cost centrally, which is what we do, we could have allocated that out to police as well. What we did was we netted it out and gave them the difference. So if you're asking, does growth cover all of the growth in the city in terms of our assessment growth, I'm going to say to you, no, it does not, because as we all know, property tax is not directly related to economic growth, and it lags behind. And so we don't have enough growth, assessment growth, to cover all of the growth numbers, and we certainly don't have enough assessment growth to cover inflation. And so what it means is that police have been asked to pick up their inflation costs, and because some of that cost we keep centrally until it's actually determined.
So the reality is, this is a generic question about the whole budget, is we're subsidizing the inflationary costs with some of the growth, which is making it harder for us to provide services because we don't have enough money to actually
provide
services to the larger city.
So maybe I could phrase it this way, Councillor Henderson. Not only is our property tax revenue not keeping pace with growth and inflation, neither are the rest of our revenues. And so what I can assure you of is that we treated police the same way we treated the rest of the budget, which is, I think, where you started.
Which is why I'm asking the,
yeah.
It is a generic question, because I
yes.
understood a slightly different way. Okay, I'm out of time, but if I don't know if we have the answer.
Yeah, okay, so when you look at the individual
let's
service...
come back around for a second round, I think, because it's going to lead to follow-up. And
might do, sure.
So, okay. So, and there'll be a second round for sure.
Sounds
so
good.
Let's just keep it rolling here. Councillor Walters? Second round.
I'm on second round.
Are you on second round? Oh, I apologize. Who's
second.
Who's on the... you want to move that, Councillor Walters?
Yep.
I'll move second round. To have a second round. Seconded by Councillor Nicol. Please vote. Display the vote. That's carried. Has anybody who's on the board here not had a first round yet? Okay. In that case, it is my time. So I went back and looked at 2008, and the budget. I pulled it up here, and the... the municipal tax levy contribution was $188,779,000. This budget proposes that the net operating requirement, in other words, the tax levy, is $292 million. Mm-hmm. We have more or less, since 2008, increased the budget of the police service by more than 50%. That sound about right? If it's gone from 188 to 292.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
During which time, the reason I went to look this up is not to suggest that we haven't, that we've invested too much.
It's that the provincial support that you noted has declined over that time in real terms because the municipal policing assistance grant has been adjusted for population but never adjusted for inflation.
That's correct. It's only worth about $13 now.
So in 2008, my guess is it probably bought us about 110 police officers. My math today says it buys us 94.
Yep, that's all right.
If you take the 14 million and divide it by 150, you get 94. And 2008, though, was the year when the previous premier's initiative grant kicked in for 10,500,000.
That's correct. And that 105 was officers for $100,000 apiece.
So $100,000 apiece didn't even cover the full cost.
It just covered.
It covered the salary.
Salaries and benefits only.
But no overheads.
No overheads.
So we actually had to top up the provincial grant because we had to hire 100 cops.
That's correct.
We actually had to come up with an extra 30 cents on the dollar.
We had to prove that we actually hired them in order to actually be able to access those funds.
And now it's 50 cents on the dollar because the costs of salaries, benefits, and overheads have gone up from 130 to 150.
If you look at just the salary and benefits portion, they're covering just over 80% of the cost.
And so when I run the numbers, 6.8% of the police budget is contributed by the provincial government when you combine those two grants.
Yeah.
Probably you could figure secondments in there somehow because the province covers...
Alert would be in those figures as well.
If we were a community of under 5,000, what percentage of the cost of our policing would be covered by the provincial government?
All of it.
100%. If we were a community of under 15,000, what percentage of our policing budget would be covered by other orders of government?
30%.
30%.
And if we were between 15,000 and us, you'd get 10%. And the bigger you are, the less you get.
Yes, true.
Meanwhile, are we policing Edmonton? Or are we policing Northern Alberta to the extent that people come here for opportunity and fall through the cracks, or bad guys come here for the same reasons good people are drawn to the hub of activity?
So we actually worked out a percentage. I think somebody asked for that, and I think 24% of all of the policing we do is dealing with folks outside the city.
Outside the city of Edmonton.
That's correct. And I should confirm that.
But 93% of the cost of picking up the pieces is paid by Edmonton taxpayers.
That's correct.
$292,000, the single largest portion of our tax base. And I'm not saying this to criticize you, because I think you take those dollars and you stretch them and you do a phenomenal job with them. And council has worked hard since I've been here to try to fund the need. And then, but the need has gone up because of the growth of the city, which we've discussed, but it's also gone up because we're all talking about prevention. We're expecting you to do the prevention. Our role in prevention is quite limited, but the FCSS grants, for example, are one thing that the city does to try to promote prevention. Mr. Rosen, the FCSS grants, which fund prevention programs and social agencies around the city, are those adjusted for inflation?
So they're adjusted. They have been adjusted a little bit for inflation, but not really to the inflation amount. And they're rebased from a population perspective periodically.
But they have not kept up with the growth of the city.
No. And the other thing, Mayor Iveson, about FCSS grants is that they're not distributed to municipalities based on need. They're distributed based on population.
So everybody gets them on a per capita basis.
Yes, and so there's a wide variety of uses between communities as to what that money is spent on.
There's no accounting for the fact that we have a higher concentration of people living in poverty here, that we have the homeless problem for the region and more or less Northern Alberta concentrated. There's no allowance for that in the FCS granting formula.
No.
And there's no allowance for that in the police funding formula.
No.
Well, that absolutely has to change. If we get nothing else out of the city charter, that has to be addressed. And not just money for the boots on the street that we need to get ahead of rising crime numbers, which is unacceptable relative to other Canadian cities, unacceptable for Edmontonians. But we also need those prevention investments, whether it's FCSS or SafeCon grants. We had SafeCon grants for a couple of years. It was a 3-year pilot. We had some We had some great results, great social return on investment, the very kinds of things that would have allowed the officers to get back to doing what they should be doing and chasing a little bit less social disorder around the city. What happened to the SAFECOM grants?
They're gone.
Gone.
Your Worship, one thing that might be of interest to you as well is what we're hearing from the provincial side of things is that we will probably see a decline in the alert funding. And so even if they reduce
and
it
sorry,
by the
hold
number...
On, just for everybody's benefit, what does alert do?
So I'm actually the chair of the alert organization in the province as well. And so alert looks after internet child exploitation, organized crime, drugs, gangs,
And the province is talking about reducing its commitment in that area.
Yes, sir. We're looking at losing 70 positions early next year out of alert. So now that downloads all those that pressures back to municipalities. Surveillance teams, fugitive apprehension, all those are going to be gone. Marijuana grow operation.
I'm going to need another round because I'm out of time. Appreciate those answers. That's very helpful clarification. That's information I will take to the legislature. I will take back. I didn't even get started on talking about mental health and addictions. I'll talk about that in the second round. I will take the chair back and go now to Councillor Walters. You were up next, I think, right?
Yes.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I just wanted to go back to the questions I was asking in the first round about schools, traffic safety around schools. So just in terms of the district, the Southwest Division or the division orientation of the service, are officers assigned to a particular division pulled out of that division frequently? Or do they largely spend their time within their division?
They largely spend the time within their division. So each division is broken up into four districts. And so they're geographically deployed to specific districts within that division. But we've gone away a little bit from...
Sorry, Chief, can you just hold on one second?
Excuse me, Brian. I just wanted to recognize that we also have Carolyn Ray's grade 6 class, also from Hollywood School in Ward 8, Hollywood School.
Hollywood.
I'm going to call it Hollywood from now on. Anyway, it's great to have you here. Your counselor is just re-entered. That's Councillor Henderson. And sorry, I'll give you some extra time, Councillor Walsh. I just want to make sure we didn't miss
you.
We always like to recognize our elementary school kids and junior high and high school if they ever showed up. But mostly it's grade 6. And those are the delinquents that the chief... No, I'm kidding. If they just came to City Hall and hung out and got some civics, then... You know, anyway, no, I'm totally... Totally off base here. Councillor Walters, I will give you a bit of extra time. Thank you. Nice to see you. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. So they're largely within, their large amount of time is spent within their division. So in a division like, for example, the Southwest, with a very high level of complaints that we receive within that division is related to traffic. A lower level, I would say, on the city, when you look at the whole city, in terms of violent crimes and property crimes.
Correct.
But yet we don't have a community traffic safety program there. We have a temporary one. So I'm struggling. I'm a little perplexed with the alignment of deployment versus need in this particular part of Edmonton.
So a couple of things. So we've redrafted the boundaries for the divisions to make sure there's more equitable distribution of workload. So that's one thing that's just taking place January 1st. The other issue is the division officers have latitude to move their resources around within their divisions. However, if there is a significant event in the city, you know, a homicide or a serious crime,
right,
there's the broader latitude for resources to be moved throughout the city on a needs basis.
And that's good practice, undeniably. But sort of day to day, week to week, month to month, where
it's the division officer that will deploy the resources according to the pressures.
Okay. So I want to come back to another question, and I don't want to sort of be too picky about this, but I've been a little confused, and this number of officers per 100,000 people statistic that keeps being raised. So, you know, to the mayor's original comment, and I think all of his comments were very important comments, but that original one about the growth in the police budget since 2008. But then we talk about that we're still falling behind because of this national average. And that national average is defined partially or skewed largely by the territories. So why do we continue to use that instead of emphasizing really what our local needs are? And I asked that question before, and we said we used our local needs, and our geographic deployment model is the measure of how many officers we actually need here. But then we keep coming back to this national average, which to me, I don't appreciate the meaning of it.
Okay, so I'll have Brian Roberts respond to that more broadly. I can tell you that is just one measure. I don't think council should take that as the measure, and that's why we provided you with a number of standards that we measure police officers, because every community is unique, and Edmonton is exclusively unique, I think, in Canada. Anyway, over to Brian Roberts.
Yes, Councilor Walter, you asked that question about our multi-year staffing plan. So the national average is calculated by police members in total in Canada divided by population multiplied by 100,000. So if we look at the influx of the territories currently shows a ratio of 390.2 sworn police to a population of 115,828. If you subtract the total of police to population ratio from the overall Canadian police to population ratio or sworn police, it comes out to 68,820. If you back out the population of 115,000 from the total Canadian population, it comes out at 35,043,000.
I suppose the point is, if you took out the territories, we would have more officers per 100,000 people than is that average.
Actually, what I was going to say is it only drops the national average by 0.6. That's all. So the national average 197, it's almost minimal.
It's disputable, but anyways, I'm curious about. I'm out of time, but
way out of time. Councillor,
thank you. Thank you. I don't need this now, but can you also let us know what is the ratio of the civilian to the population is and the EPS? Don't have to share it now, but
I believe we have that information actually, Brian.
And how do we compare?
Yeah, currently we have 647 non-sworn. The national average is 78.8. When we put it through the formula, EPS currently has 74.4. So we're roughly four non-sworn under average, under the Canadian average.
Okay. So, Chief, I absolutely agree with the Mayor that we need to have that discussion with the province on that they pick up their fair share of the policing cost. I added the two unfunded packages, and it amounts to 1% property tax increase, right, both of them, right?
Yeah.
Which amounts to about less than $2 a month per household based on the average assessment.
That's not quite right, Councillor.
It's not?
Ms. Rosen can give you the right number of what 1% is equivalent to per household.
Per household for, I apologize.
1% tax increase is equal household to, is it $15, $16?
Oh, I need to actually look that up. I apologize.
Yeah. I just looked at the 5.3% and I divided by 1% and that came to less than $2 a month.
But a month. Sorry, I thought you said a year.
No, less than $2 a month.
Okay, yeah, so, you're correct. Sorry. I wanted to make sure that we I apologize. I gave you extra time. Yeah,
no, it's less than $2 a month for 2015. But then you go to 2016, we would require another percentage increase. Then we go to 2017, we require another percentage increase, right, based on your long term, right? So what I need to understand that if we were to bite this bullet and say, you know, look, we're going to do this, right? But what do I tell citizens? What do they get out of it? Do they see the response time going up to the target?
That would be the hope. That we would be able to achieve, that we'd be responding to calls quicker, that we would have more robust investigations, that we'd have increased traffic safety, that we would have a safer city.
Well, you have certain targets you want to meet. You want to have, you know, you want to respond to the calls within 7 minutes, 80% of the time.
That's correct. That's just a target that we can measure right. year to year.
But then you want to have 25% of the officer's time directed toward proactive community-based policing.
Absolutely.
Right? And we want to have two-person cars 40% of the time. Right. So I just want to understand that, would you achieve that with those all those, if we make that commitment, would you make that, I know you can't make a firm commitment, but are you going to be targeting to achieve those?
Absolutely, without question.
And you will achieve them to the...
Well, we'll certainly try, and I can tell you that if we're successful and if populations stabilize and those kinds of things, obviously that ask would be adjusted as well. Yeah. I think if we continue to go with 30,000 people coming to the city every year over the next whatever it is 5 years, I think the pressure on the police service will continue to rise accordingly.
Yeah, because I need to understand that, because if we do pass it, and it's going to be just a big increase, 1% of the total budget, what are we looking at, an increase plus the capital budget we're having discussions about. So, I know we're going to have further discussions. Can we move amendments, are you saying?
No, because strictly speaking, the capital budget motion is still what's hovering out there. And so to make amendments at this point, we'd have to postpone this and start to stack up.
Well, then I can wait. It's not.
Okay. Yeah. If we can leave it, it gets very procedurally complex. If there's a will to do amendments, there's a way, but it's. So it would be better once we've completed the amendments and postponed the capital vote to then start to stack up operating amendments. So.
Can you ask a quick question? I'm running out of time. Ms. Rosen, I'm looking at the page 500. There's 2015 cost for that, and then there's annualization. So when we pass a motion and that is approved, do we fund for the whole year, or we just fund for the 2015, then next year we fund for the annualization?
So Council's budget principles would require you to fund for the whole year. Last year we strayed away from that because we had a challenging year, but that the default position should be fund for the whole year.
But then, which would mean that we will collect more in the year one.
And that would free up money for one-time expenditures, which currently we have none.
Councillor Nickel?
You don't have?
Don't have any money for one-time expenditures currently.
All right, thank you.
Well, very little. Councillor Nickel?
Mr. Roberts, kind of statistician to statistician here. You have to help me understand a little bit of, because you probably answered my questions that I answered in the budget, my budget questions, correct?
Both Joel and myself.
Okay, both. Okay, so you can work me over in tandem. And so I look at the rate youth charge per 100,000 for Edmonton. It's gone from 5,323 to 4,599. Now that's per 100,000, correct?
What rate would that be?
That's page 100 of 206. That's total all violations per 100,000. And that's page 106 in my budget questions.
Would you mind providing the question number so I can just make sure I'm looking at
Question number 15-0750. And, okay, while you're looking that one up.
We have it.
Oh, you're good. That's right on. So, because the average age in Edmonton right now is 34 years, right? So that means we have a large youth demographic that has entered our population. Still, is not the trend line pointing downwards towards in youth crime?
I think the average age that we use to do some of our work with is 18 to 34 years. There's a larger range. 34 is the top.
Okay, then that turns me back then to the total. We're back to all the criminal code violations, excluding traffic. I just want to make sure before I speak to some of this that the statistics, how I interpret them, are valid. per 100, here we have is per 100,000 population, criminal code incidences goes from 9,163 in 2009 to 7,104 in 2013. I specifically left out 2014 as per your request because they are not comparable because you don't have all the statistics by Statistics Canada.
That's correct.
Okay. Chief, then I've got to throw this back at you, and I think you guys are doing a great job with the resources you have. But since 2009, and I asked Ms. Rosen to dig me up these questions, you've had a 14% increase on average in capital, and you've had a 7% increase in operating budget over the same time period. And so the question now begs to answer. The trend line is going down. When do we, this pace, this rate of increase is pretty significant. From a taxpayer's perspective, what do I say to them that the crime rates are, it looks like for me, crime rates have actually declined overall over this five-year period. And I think there's a factor to deal with the aging demographic that's also entering our population. That's an offsetting factor. And crime rates across the country are all exhibiting that. And then turning around and saying, you want more.
So the face of crime has changed. So the way we investigate crime based on changing legislation has caused us to spend more time doing the same investigation. And I'll just give you one example, which is impaired driving, which was something we frequently investigated every day in the city. So the average time spent for a police officer to investigate impaired driving 20 years ago, 15 years ago, was an hour. Today, for one investigation of impaired driving, we're upwards of 5 hours to investigate that particular crime. Yeah. So the statistics sometimes don't tell the whole story. But
we did talk about clearance rates here, right? And you improved your, actually here, your weighted clearance rate number, right, has stayed relatively the same in terms of clearance rate, in terms of the clearance rate. So I don't know. It seems like a bit of a contradiction to me. I do agree with you on the one side that certain nature and aspects of the crimes have changed. No question about that. What has to be dealt with when I was a kid compared to what I see in the schools and the emerging things is much more challenging. With my last 5 seconds here, though, but isn't there an onus on the city and the police department to address with the province the legislative burden, my goodness, the red tape that is being forced on compliance for prosecuting some of these crimes? And isn't that where a lot of the cost drivers are?
I would say it's almost unrealistic. What we have to do with respect to investigating crime nowadays, the burden is huge, and what we have to take forward for a prosecution today as compared to 20 years ago, 10 years ago, I think it accounts for, we're an expensive business. I don't deny that at all, and we're getting more and more expensive every day, and I, as a taxpayer, I feel the same way. Like the cost of policing is the number one thing on most communities' budgets, the question is always asked, when is it going to stop? And the challenge for us is it becomes more and more complex to get somebody before the courts. And a simple case now is taking, I gave the example in the presentation, you know, something that was as simple as getting an IP number required a phone call before, now it's an 8-hour search warrant to do something as simple as that. The burden is crushing us, and I can tell you, you know, our folks are frustrated because we do have a situation where we are arresting people, they're being convicted after a very lengthy investigation, and then they're out on the street for our guys back to the headquarters building.
Councillor Oshry.
Thank you. Just to share with Council, Ms. Bucks, the numbers here for the Northwest Campus operation savings. So Greasebaugh was $500,000 in-house training, $250,000, and the third one, I'm sorry, I can't read the writing, $320,000 for, it says Northwest Information Center?
The interim station.
Oh, the interim station. Okay, thank you. All right, total of $1,007,000. Is the, can you explain to me what the transfer to reserves line item is? $4.7 million?
Just got to find my sheet here, just one second. That's the alert fund. Oh, that's the purchase of vehicles.
So how's that different to fleet services?
So the fleet services operating budget is the maintenance portion, but what we do is we transfer funding to cover the cost of vehicles into capital.
So sorry, that's I don't understand. So why would a capital purchase be on the operation budget?
So when we get our operating budget approved, we are able to move money from capital. We always bring it back to the supplementary capital budget adjustment, but we provide if we need to purchase vehicles. Because when we have officers, as I said before, we factor in the cost, we factor in a piece for vehicles. So we also, at times we will transfer money, but we always do it back through the supplementary capital budget adjustment.
Ms. Rosen, can you?
Yep, so when they said that the average police officer cost was $150,000 and that it included some overhead, including vehicles, well, that comes into the operating budget. It has to get to the capital budget. Somehow it does that through a transfer first to a reserve and then from the reserve to capital.
So it's not a reserve fund that sits there?
No, it has constant turnover.
Thank you very much. So the downtown, so with the new arena district coming, sort of begs the question that Northlands, well, we don't know what's happening with the arena yet, but are we not going to need less police service out at Northlands? If there's going to be less dates of less events, less, potentially not an arena one day, maybe something different, who knows, but isn't it more, and sorry, before you answer that, same thing with, the Galleria is not really done yet, the LRT extra 20,000 riders, but we're sort of basically moving people from buses or cars. I mean, this is just, to me, it sounds like a lot of this is just replacing resources from other areas of the city to downtown. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I'll turn that over to Graham Hogue, who has actually talked to the folks about how the dynamic will change downtown just because it's growing up as opposed to out, but maybe Graham can respond to that. Or
the majority of the resources that are contained up near Northlands now are part of downtown division already. They will change to Northwest division. There's a B program up there, but the majority of the calls that occur in that around that area are the LRT calls, the migratory paths through the city that we're strategically targeting with the LRT program.
So I still don't understand. You're asking for 30, well, sorry, there's you're asking for 410 member beat squads downtown, I think, plus some associated stuff. So can you, I just don't understand why, just because we have development downtown, so we'll have more people downtown, why wouldn't we just pull out police resources from outside of downtown, more, a higher percentage into the downtown core?
That's been done in other cities in terms of pulling on duty members, but then you're basically sacrificing calls for service in those areas at the same time, or calling in overtime.
But shouldn't the calls for service be less if there's more people downtown and less people elsewhere?
They still keep coming in everywhere else, though. The calls keep coming in.
Maybe I can answer it this way.
Thanks.
Just from a layman's perspective, the dynamic of what's happening at Northlands completely changes downtown. Northlands right now, if I go to a hockey game tomorrow night, I get there maybe an hour before the game. I leave the second the game's over, maybe halfway through the third period.
I'm surprised you go in the first place.
So,
when you've
got the hockey game happening downtown, people are going to be in the downtown area hours before the game, either at the arena or one of the many venues that are opening up around the arena. Okay. Game finishes, they're going to be hanging out after the game, which I've seen in Vancouver.
Okay. Just another question, Chief. What's the biggest challenge you've got? I've only got a few seconds, so what's the one thing that you really want to accomplish this year that needs it?
that would be to deal with the issues around the homeless, the addicted, and the mentally ill. They are consume a vast amount of our time. We need to get more partners on board. We have a couple of things on the go. We're working towards a community wellness center that we think will free up our people to be focusing on the predators as opposed to the vulnerable folks that the province and other agencies should be taking on.
Councillor Essinger.
Thank you very much. Now, in your presentation, you mentioned that sexual assaults continue to be the significant challenge, and you're talking about more reporting. Does that take a specialized type of officer to work with that incident?
Absolutely, it does. So a frontline police officer may respond in the first instance, but obviously these people need support. And historically, we have just had that frontline police officer respond, take a statement, thank you very much, and we'll call you when court takes place, etc., etc. No support whatsoever. We've changed our model to be very supportive of the victim. So we actually have a team of folks that follow them all the way through and support them. So we would bring in a specialist that is trained on working with that individual and understand the sensitivities and the victimization, work with that person and work with them all the way through the court process as well, because we know the court process is probably equally as traumatic as the incident, and so we work with that person all the way through the process right to the end.
Okay, is that now part of your regular budget, because it's part of your regular work? My question is, when I looked in the growth package, it talks about increase in child protection and some of the other areas, but it doesn't talk about an increase to address sexual assaults. Is that just not in there, or is it somewhere else?
We are managing with what we have, but we would redeploy and find other ways to support that. So, for example, resources, if the homicide rate is down, which it currently is, we would move other resources, folks that would be involved in statement taking, that sort of thing, we would move them over to that area as well. So, I mean, everything's fluid. If something goes down, we'll shift it over temporarily and see if that's, we're hoping to keep the homicide rate down. If that changes, when I first became the chief, I put 10 new resources into homicide. That's because homicides were high. We would look, if that continues to regress, we would look at a redeployment of resources, which is that scrub down we do every year.
Yeah. Okay, it was just because of the specialized nature, I was wondering if they could be as fluid as that, but you assure me they can.
In some areas. We did prop up sexual assault investigators last year in the budget.
Okay. Now, I understand that policing today is very complex. We've heard some of those factors, counterterrorism and mental illness and those facts. We've heard about the downloading from the province, many areas. And I just wonder out loud, if we were able to invest more in prevention, if in a few years we would see better return on that dollar by doing prevention now rather than waiting to do prevention. We have the dollars. I don't know if I'm clear, but
yeah,
that's my concern.
I think I understand your question, and I think that's where we want to go, because there's no doubt if we can, well, I'll give you my example. If we could have school resource officers in junior high schools and elementary schools, I think the investment would multiply over time. That you would see that there would be more engagement, there's more trust, there's more working together. We're dealing with some of those issues at the front end, and they're not, I talk to lots of people in schools, and they say, I can pick out who your future clients are going to be. And so I think if we were to invest there, we would see a return on investment exponential into the future. The challenge is to get to that point, and it is one of my, sort of a personal thing for me. I'd like to see school resource officers in junior high schools. We're having trouble keeping school resource officers in high schools. And that's a 50-50 funding model we have right now with the school boards. The school boards pay for 50% of our school resource officers, and we're still struggling. I know last year, due to some pressures, we actually looked at taking school resource officers out and putting them on the front line to respond to priority one calls. I mean, we're in a better place, but it is always shifting. But I totally agree with where you're going and what you're talking about. That's the ideal state. We're always trying to figure out how did they get there, and I think this HUOPS project and this community wellness center that we've been marketing here in the last couple of years with the province and the feds and the municipality, I think that has great potential to cut down on the number of police officers you're going to need into the future.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Henderson.
Well, I think, you know, my first question, at least, I don't know if you heard the second one, but the $165,000 per officer for the funded package?
Sorry, so the funded package, because those officers are higher level positions, they're in superintendents, inspectors, typically the 150 is a fifth year constable. So because these 14 positions are sergeants, staff sergeants, inspectors, superintendents, those are higher paid positions. So that particular one is because these 14 are at a higher level.
So I'm guessing then that the majority, that also the percentage of the salary and benefits will be a much higher percentage than in the 150,000 number.
For these 14, yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm still a little bit lost, though, on the 150,000, given the answer. So unless I missed a piece of the puzzle, it was 120,000 was the average.
Yeah.
Then we had, you said 10%, which was for their overhead.
Sorry.
That gives us, I heard a 10% figure.
Roughly,
you used.
Yes.
That brings us to 132,000. What's the other 18,000?
What else do we have in that number?
10% is premiums. The other percentage is either the infrastructure related.
So the other percentages are the infrastructure related expenditures. So the 10% is for their kit and clothing and some of that pieces, and then there's the infrastructure pieces as well.
Which, but the a lot of that infrastructure, so the infrastructure would be the car or not the car?
It's part of it's part of the infrastructure.
Okay, all right. And then I guess I have the same questions as well, because there's different numbers in each of these packages, but all the packages are saying is we're getting people. So it actually comes out to 150,000 in the first unfunded package that goes on existing services, but for the downtown, we're back up to 159,000 per officer.
So if you look at the downtown, in next year, you'll see a reduction of 748,000. So there are some one-time startup costs in 2015. If you back out the one-time costs that are allocated in 2015, you're actually down to 144 per officer.
Great, thanks. I just was trying to make sense of it. Great, thank you very much.
Very good questions, Councillor. Good clarification there. Councillor McKean.
Thank you. Chief, we've been talking a little bit about social disorder and people with mental illness and addictions. I don't think it would be unusual to get a call, public disturbance or some such. What happens when your officer arrives, and what is done about that situation?
Specific to mental illness or?
Yeah, or sort of a, you know, a chronic street alcoholic, they're extremely inebriated, or you come across somebody that is obviously in having a psychotic episode or something. What do you do in those situations?
So it really is very fluid. So for example, if the person, a lot of times we'll get called because somebody, there's a fear aspect by a member of the public. So we respond, and it turns out it's just the way the person is reacting. They may be off their medication, they may be reacting to some environmental situation. If the person is impaired, if they're a danger to themselves or the public in the initial state, we may take them and house them. That's the last thing we want to do, and that's the rarest occasion we do that. So normally what we do is if somebody's got either a physical or mental issue in the first instance, we'll take them to a facility, and largely a hospital. That's where we get bogged down because we end up sitting there for 6, 8, 10 hours waiting for that individual to see a doctor. Usually two police officers if there was any potential violence at the call.
Hospital might not have a bed.
Hospital might not have a bed. They may process. We may sit there, and it happens quite often, is we sit there for 6, 8, 10 hours with two police officers tied up. They see a doctor, and they're released. immediately after, because there is no there's no reason for to put them in a hospital bed. They've got another issue. So, and that's when the, you know, that I refer to as the cycle of despair continues, because we might leave and we might get a call back to that same individual and have to arrest him or process him again in 2 or 3 hours. Sometimes we will take, a lot of times we'll take those particular individuals, if they're just inebriated in one way, shape, or form, we'll take them to a shelter and get them to a warm place to stay. But I can give you an example. This last cold snap, we had certain people, there was no place to take them. So we took them down and gave them a blanket and put them down in the cell block, not locking them up, but just giving them a place to get through the night to help them out.
And I would think that the same population, again, homeless and mentally ill, profoundly mentally ill, or homeless and chronic alcoholic or addict, that there's a lot of petty crime caused by that population. So breaking into cars, shoplifting, all those sorts of things. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right, and that's why, you know, people say, well, what's the big deal about leaving a loony or a toonie on the visible in the front seat of a car? Well, these people, you know, two loonies and two toonies, that gets you the bottle you need to get through the next few hours, so they will break into a car for that small amount of money.
What, and you may have said this, can you quantify at all what percentage of your resources are going to what I just described, chronic addiction and alcoholics and homeless mentally ill?
So some of that we can give some accurate figures. Some of it is, there's overlap there. We're estimating at any given time it's between 25 and 30%.
Yeah, it's a lot of police resources.
And it's different, as you know, it's different in various parts of the city. Obviously, that number's up in certain parts of the city, and it's lower in other parts of the city.
You talked about your wellness center, but even in that situation, we've just had a very brief discussion about it, and it sounds like a really potentially positive idea. But even in that situation, that's not long-term, right? That's a medium-term solution, or do you see long-term solution there?
I see it sort of short-term, medium-term, long-term. We put forward legislation to the province, and we're getting very positive feedback around being able to just create a place where people can go and be held for 24 hours in a non-judicial police capacity. So they go there, they get an opportunity to get to a better place in 24 hours, and then they're guided to other places, whether it's a mental health facility, maybe it's just short-term medical care, maybe it's a housing opportunity for them that's opened up. I mean, a lot of times, historically, we would arrest people and throw them in jail, and they were in housing. They had been put in housing. They lost that housing. So by working with all the other agencies, we work better together than in our silos. And I think historically, the police have worked in silos, as have others. And I think we have to break that down. It speaks to the fact of getting the cost of policing down.
Thank you.
Well, I can't help but see Jan Fox, who works with REACH, nodding her head vigorously behind you there, Chief. And I know you've done work to reach out to the homeless serving agencies, the mental health community, others involved in crime prevention. Sorry, Councillor Essinger, if you could start my time. Apologies. I was going to talk about mental health, but I think Councillor McKean has really covered it really, really well. But then the numbers, again, I mean, I'm extrapolating here, but if on the low side, 25% of your officer's time is spent dealing with social disorder that relates to addictions and mental health, and that's on the low side, because you said 25 to 30%, out of a $360 million budget, that's $90 million. Again, 93% of that is paid by taxpayers in the city of Edmonton. That's 600 cops if you divide 90 million by 150,000.
Math was never my strong point, Your Worship, but I accept your figures.
Well, so I went back and I crunched the numbers a little further. Between 2008 and 2014, City Council increased its allocation from the tax levy by 55%. So close to Councillor Nichols' numbers, though I was going from a different base here. 6.5% a year.
Yes.
Or 7 years, 7 years, 7 years, 6.5% a year. The province increased it by 4% over those 8 years, which actually works out to 0.06.
Correct.
Over 8 years, they increased it by 4% total.
which is 0.6% a year.
Okay. And some of that is just to do with census counts.
And that's only population.
That's only population.
That's only because they were adjusted by population.
That's correct.
So when we did ours at 6.5% a year, that's covering two things, or three actually. It's covering population growth. It's covering inflation. Because 82% of your budget is staffing costs.
That's correct.
It's paying people to do their job.
That's correct.
And that cost has risen in Alberta too.
Yes, it has.
Okay, so 6.5% is population plus inflation plus continuing to pick up the pieces.
Correct.
Paid for by property taxpayers.
Correct.
On behalf of Northern Alberta.
Yes.
Correct.
Well, this is what I wrote to the Premier about. This was the letter that came out of the City Building Summit, the submission to the provincial government with respect to the budget, because this has to stop. One of two things needs to happen. They need to give us a whole bunch more money so we can hire all the police, a couple hundred more police officers to keep picking up after people with addictions and mental health challenges. Or they have to get serious about prevention and partner with you on a wellness center and partner with REACH on after-school programs and get school resource officers out there and fund FCSS and do all the things we need to do to bring down the number of people in distress so that you can spend a little less than 25 to 30% of your time being the social service agency of last resort.
First response.
And this would help us too, because in addition to responding to EMS calls, you see our fire guys out there being first responders to people down on the streets, people with street wounds, all of these other things. So this isn't even just policing. This touches all emergency services.
No question.
Well, I look forward to being able to continue to work with you, Chief, and with you, Commissioner, on the alert issues, on the commission issues, on the funding issues, and I really do appreciate your commitment to prevention as well. If things don't change, you need these positions, though.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I'll take back the chair. And Councilor Nicola, you need a third round? Okay. I'll move a third. I'll move the chair. Okay, Councilor Knack, seconded by?
Second.
Councilor Esslinger. Okay, please vote on the third round. Votes. And display the vote, and that's carried. Councilor Nicola.
Chief, you also have to agree that throwing money at a problem is not just the is all the solution. There has to be some fundamental structural change for the police departments in Calgary and Edmonton, for processing, for handling, dealing with the clearance rates and so on, as they represent a very, very large, I call it red tape, but you can call it administrative burden. And doesn't that also have to go hand in hand with any ask for more money? From a legal court system perspective.
Absolutely. So I've said this before, there's no way we can arrest ourselves out of this problem.
Exactly.
I mean, it's never going to happen. In fact, we have to take the exact opposite approach, is to arrest less people, process fewer people through the criminal justice system, and put fewer people in jail. And I'd like to qualify that by saying put the right people in jail. As opposed to perhaps the wrong people in jail.
Yeah, perhaps.
Absolutely. So very good point, and I would agree with you 100%. But yeah, there's a huge administrative burden behind. I mean, I was frustrated with the amount of paperwork when I was a young constable on the street many, many, many years ago. But if you look at the paper burden on a frontline constable today, it's chewing up probably 50 or 60% of his or her time every day is just processing the paperwork, as compared to being out there keeping the streets safe.
Keeping them safe from preventative to the actual arrest, and that is a number that needs to be quantified, Mr. Mayor, and hammered out there, because back in 2004, the same discussion, Councillor Anderson was here, and those numbers were starting to climb dramatically. Again, the burden, the red tape, through the system and the revolving door part of the system, is part and parcel of what you're dealing with.
That's correct. If we can keep them, if we, the police, as the first line of, if you want to call it the first line of defense, if we can keep them away from the criminal justice system, the rest of the criminal justice system, that's where huge savings can take place, and largely those savings would be on the part of the province and the feds.
Deputy Mayor, take the chair.
Have the chair.
I think that's a good point. There's a whole bunch of non-monetary things that other orders of government can do that would reduce the amount of time your and so in addition to saying invest in mental health and help us bear a reasonable burden, there and you have those recommendations around arrest processing time, court time, warrant execution, etc., etc., etc.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, and that's a fair point. And then the big savings here is in the healthcare system, right?
Tremendous saving in the healthcare system.
Way more zeros than we're talking about here.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, the Minister of Health knows a little something about this because he used to sit in this chair. So, and I'll look forward to having that conversation together with you alongside you, Chief. So thank you. I'll take back the chair.
I'm the chair.
Okay. I don't see any further questions for the police. This has been fun.
Speak for yourself.
I didn't mean to put you on the hot seat. I was just asking the question.
No, thanks very much, Your Worship and Councillors.
Excellent. Well, we won't consider amendments right now, but I gather there will be amendments pertaining to police when we are ready to make amendments. So, but just because of process, we're not quite there right now. So next up, and we have 15 minutes left, we can probably get the presentation from EEDC and then come back to questions afterwards. I do, for those of you who are here, who are in the queue to present later, thanks, Commissioner Rizal. I predict these will go a little faster in the afternoon than the one we just did, but you never know. So, clear your Friday. Okay, EEDC, are you going to be able to make the presentation before lunch? Awesome. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, we will require a few moments as we just received the presentation to get it loaded up for you.
Okay. Oh, go as fast as you can. Okay, and so just from the clerk, I understand Space Science Center will not be presenting. They don't have a presentation and will not be available for questions.
They will be available for questions if you wish we can call.
Okay, it's questions only. We could do a bit of a selection process here potentially to see. I mean, we don't have, because we got a lot of people sitting through a lot of stuff here. You know what, we'll do that at 1:30 once everybody's back. We'll just see whether there's anybody we can release at 1:30 because we don't have everybody here right now, so we'll try at 1:30. All right, carry on with the presentation. Mr. Ferguson. Ms. Ferguson, welcome. Not Mr. and Mrs. Ferguson.
That's right.
Jointly and severally.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to provide comment on our budget submission, which begins on page 473 of your binder. I'm here today on behalf of our Board of Directors and accompanied by Executive Director of Finance, Corrine Ferguson. 2.5 years ago, we set out on a mission to create a high-performing economic development agency called EEDC. that now incorporates Enterprise Edmonton, Edmonton Tourism, Shaw Conference Center, the Research Park, Startup Edmonton, your joint venture position in Tech Edmonton, and Make Something Edmonton. We set out to create a culture of entrepreneurship, innovation, and competitiveness that forever differentiates our city, and to be your arm's-length organization that leads economic development activities in partnership with the city, the business community, Chamber of Commerce, Northlands, Edmonton Airport, the post-secondary institutions, and certainly our regional partners and provincial government. You asked us to support growth of our local businesses, which now makes up a $90 billion economy that's averaging 4.5% growth over the last 3 years, the highest in the country. You asked us to build an entrepreneurial community that now contributes 48% of our net new jobs, the highest in the country. And you've asked us to change the image and reputation of our city through language and stories and tools that's winning awards from our marketing campaigns and is certainly repositioning us in the eyes of the rest of the country. You've asked us to manage the Shaw Conference Center, a 30-year-old facility which has increased revenues 20% over the last 2 years, which is the highest growth rate in the country. And you've asked us to boost tourism events and attractions towards 52 events a year, stellar events a year, which allowed us to engage a record number of hotels participating in the Destination Marketing Fund at a time when the fund has increased from 1% to 3%, which is the highest growth in the country. And you asked us to activate the Edmonton Research Park, which is resulting in record occupancy levels and a new wave of building, where we are now looking to partner with the province on the Southlands to create more innovation-based companies and business incubators, which we have two of the best in the country. And you asked to do this not alone, which we haven't. Everything we do is in partnership, so we don't take credit for everything, but certainly we are working together with those stakeholders to build a great city and a great economy. We focused on growing the economic impact through all of our divisions to $165 million this year, which is a 10.1x return on the public funds that we receive from you. And that is at a time when we've also reduced the funds that we get from the city from 43% of our budget to 38% budget currently, and we're on target to reach 33% of our budget by 2017. Our board believes we're delivering, and we're working every day to hopefully have you feel the same way. Today we're requesting a 2.8% increase, just under $450,000 to our base operating budget, which is in line with administration recommendations for us, and four separate service packages totaling $2.3 million. I'm going to go through the four service packages. The first package, request is $500,000 per year for Tech Edmonton Health Accelerator. This funding is extremely strategic, not only to create new companies and new healthcare technologies, but really to reposition the city of Edmonton back as the leader for healthcare innovation in Canada, which we once were. Our contribution is leveraged over 5x, five times from partners, $7.5 million of funding that has been secured from the federal government, the Canadian Accelerator Incubator Program, and we're still waiting on the final amount from the province, which we're anticipating at $500,000 a year over 5 years. The second request is $500,000 per year towards the operations of Edmonton Tourism. This funding allows us to add additional personnel to manage the increased volume of marketing dollars which is coming from industry. 2 years ago, the funding we received from the city was leveraged one-to-one with industry, and the work that we've done on events and the consumer brand and the international connections has gained confidence of the hotels participating in the Destination Marketing Fund, and we're winning more, and we're now being asked to do more in terms of activating that brand locally, and we're operating at about a 3.6-to-1 leverage on the funding that we receive. Our challenge is that the Destination Marketing Fund dollars cannot go to personnel, and although they're increasing from $2.5 million to $5 million next year, we need additional personnel in order to activate that increase in volume. The third request is $1 million a year for the Shaw Conference Center's operating maintenance. As I mentioned, this is a 30-year-old building that is operating at its highest capacity in history. But maintenance and repair items that are under $100,000 cannot be capitalized, and they fall into our operating budget. These are things that are like replacing old toilet seats that are yellowing, and wobbly tables and tired chairs that are losing the cushion, that are critical to our guest experience and to our reputation as we compete for business and growth going forward. The fourth request is $300,000 a year for Port Alberta. which is being redeployed under our Enterprise Edmonton division. We took over the Port Alberta assets earlier this year, and we're working with the Edmonton International Airport, the province, and the federal government, and our neighboring municipalities to reconstitute this as a regional export, trade, transportation, and logistics organization, with equal funding coming from each over time. We will be the first money in. Our first initiative under this has been to apply for a free trade zone status under Port Alberta South in cooperation with the airport. We're confident this is now moving in a way that meets everyone's expectations. As you know, we instigate and or support a tremendous number of initiatives and create a rhythm and pulse in an energy and non-residential tax base in the city. Our support for things like Commonwealth Games, Light Up the Bridge, Downtown Vibrancy Task Force, the 22 Cranes in the Sky, the $4 billion Cascana deal, the KLM flight to Amsterdam, all those other things we do within our existing budget. These are things that we do outside, and it's about growing the city, growing the economy, and growing the pulse and the rhythm in the city of Edmonton. Occasionally, unfortunately, we have to ask for new sources of funds that allow us to develop these highly leveraged projects with other funding partners, or we need to properly maintain a city's building asset, like the Shaw Conference Center. So forgive us for making these requests during a tight budget year, but we're delivering on what you asked us to do, and that is to continually grow the top-line revenue for the city of Edmonton, and that's happening now. So thank you very much, and we will welcome any questions now or after lunch.
We've got time for one, or we can just pick up once we get back. So. Yeah, we're a little tight, so why don't we come back at 1:30 and we'll start the questions then.
Okay.
Great. Okay. So with the consent of the group, we'll recess a little bit early, and we'll see you in 93 minutes.